This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns and Chad P.
Here, for goodness sakes.
Good loss. We're on a date.
This is a date?
This is a date.
You are so cheap.
You betcha. 23 years of marriage later, this is all you're going to get.
Oh, boy.
If it was still warm outside, I'd take
Honey,
you out for a snowball.
You know what I want to do today?
What's that?
Kill you.
That's right.
Class is in.
Hey, it's Rock School right here on the Rock School Radio Network, emanating from the campus, Southeastern Louisiana University. My name is Joe Burns, and sitting to my immediate left, she paid $200 out of my account, but it's my loving wife
of
23 years. Hi, it's Tammy. Tammy Burns, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello,
folks. Welcome to the radio show.
Hey, what about me?
It's Chad over there.
Oh, Chad, get out of here.
Nope. Paid $200 and asked specifically for you not to be in the studio.
That's
here.
Right.
Are you seriously going to keep this stipulation?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's my money, Chad.
Ladies and gentlemen, you would be stunned. Now, my wife's here in the studio with us. You would be stunned, A, at the fact that she's married to me, and B, how many of these Rock School show topics Tammy has actually given me, because what she has me do week after week is download a series of morning shows from the internet, and you listen to, I mean, it's a couple out of
North Carolina. Mm-hmm. The Bob and Sherry Show.
And they talk about all these different topics, and you are forever coming home with topics written on the back
absolutely.
Of
business cards.
Business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And saying,
would this work?
And it's stunning how many show topics are actually given by you for this show,
because
people think I make them all up, and a lot of them are done by you.
Can I have my money back?
It's already at KSLU. Today's topic was given by you, and I can't believe I didn't think of this before today, the history of the 8-track tape.
Gotta love it.
That's right. I remember having 8-track tapes. As a matter of fact, the 8-track player that I got, I remember my dad being about the most uncool human being in terms of music in the world, but about 12 or 13 I was. He came to me on my birthday and handed me a briefcase. And I thought, you know, a briefcase? Gosh, thanks. What a hip, you know, gift for a 13-year-old.
Well, he was a businessman,
I know.
You know, it could have been a briefcase.
It could have been. But when you cracked it open, it was actually two speakers. And on the side of it, it had a slot for an 8-track tape.
Sweet.
I know. And it was from Radio Shack.
Ooh.
And he said to me, okay, now you know what it is. Let's get in the car. We're going to Kmart.
Here we go.
Lived up north. And you can buy 2 8-track tapes. And he was going to pay for it. I don't remember what the second one was. But it might have been the Osmonds. That's how uncool I was. But the one that I remember buying was Jim Croce's Greatest Hits. And I about played the silly thing out. And I remember taking it home, plugging it in, and jamming it in the side. And it makes that real hard ka-chunk when it gets into place. And the capstan and the pinch roller slam together. And the first song that played was Jim Croce, You Don't Mess Around With Jim. So while you're in the studio for an hour today, the history of the 8-track tape, songs that you remember on 8-track tape.
That's it.
Songs that I remember on 8-track tape. And we even posted on Facebook songs that people from Facebook remember on 8-track tape.
And we don't really care what they remember, but you got to use it anyway,
thanks.
Right?
Be nice to the people who listen to the radio
All
show.
Right.
It's Jim Croce, Rock School.
Uptown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bumps. 42nd Street got Big Jim, a walker, he a pool shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse.
Mm-hmm.
First 8-track I ever owned right there. Don't mess around with Jim. Jim Croce. Let's talk about the history of the 8-track tape. This is what my wife wanted to talk about. She's sitting here in the studio with us. Do you know who William Powell Lear is? No? In the song Money by Pink Floyd, they say, "Wish I had me a Lear jet."
Oh, no.
That's the guy that created Lear jets.
Yeah. Can't be the same guy.
It is. However, before he got into building airplanes, William Powell Lear actually made a name for himself making communication equipment for airplanes and was the first guy who created a endless loop wire recorder. It used to be that you recorded on wire rather than on tape. So he created this sort of endless loop that kept going, and it was used to record content from the airplanes and what the instruments were doing and things like that. Well, he was the first guy to come up with that. Keep that in mind. Moving along, there was a guy named Earl Madman Muntz, who was an automobile dealer, who basically lost all of his money in a bad television deal and was looking for some way to get all of his money back. While he was working in television, he noticed that people in radio were using these things called carts. Now, you and I met at a radio station in Alabama. Do you remember every time we recorded a commercial, it was on this little plastic thing made by a company called Fidelipack?
Absolutely, and the brown cart.
Right.
Yep.
It had about a minute and 12 seconds worth of tape inside of it.
It was
a miniature 8-track tape. It was made by a company called Fidelipack. Actually, a guy named George Eish created it. And he looked at this thing. He, Madman Muntz, looked at this thing, and he said, well, if it holds commercials, if it holds liners, why can't it hold music? It's got a quarter-inch tape in it. I could make this thing create something and basically record music on it. So now we got two guys, William Powell Lear, as we talk about the 8-track tape, and Earl Madman Muntz. These two people are going to come together to create what we consider the 8-track today. But before we get there, let's play another song. Do you remember Babs DeFebo?
Absolutely.
Now, she's not a rock star, ladies and gentlemen.
And she's not in the cartel.
No. She is a friend of yours from, where is she now, New York?
The DeFebos come from the New York area, but her hometown was Steubenville, Ohio.
Home of Wild Cherry.
That's it.
Play that funky music, white boy.
Oh, yeah. She had seen them many times in concert.
In fact, I think they played at her high school reunion, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Grassroots, when we asked everybody on Facebook, what song do you remember having on 8-track? Grassroots is what she said. So this one goes out for your friend, Babs DeFebo. Here's Grassroots, Rock School. History of the 8-track tape here on Rock School. It's coming out of the grassroots there for Babs DeFebo. How you like being on the radio so far?
I like it.
Do you?
You know, when I'm
not paying $200 every week to do this.
Well, no, but, you know, I have an idea.
What's the idea?
See, you and I do this so well with each other. Is there...
Radio, you mean?
Yeah. Is there any way we can, like, get rid of Chad?
Hey!
By the way, when you stepped out during that last song, Chad requested the next song. The next song is being played. I know you don't know what it is, but Chad requested the next song. Just keep that in mind.
Throw me a bone, please.
Just keep this in mind. Chad requested the next song. Okay. Inventor George Eish had created the Fidelipack. Now, Madman Muntz, this ex-car dealership guy, he took these Fidelipack players, had them made in Japan, and then started to use these brand new hi-fi heads, these tape heads that would allow either mono or stereo playing, and bundled these things together with standard quarter-inch tape, just adding more tape inside of these Fidelipack carts. Now, I know what people are going to say. Well, now is the 8-track born? Not yet. The heads at this time, the only amount that they would allow would be 4 tracks. So if you bought one of Muntz's heads, and by the way, we're in about 1963 here. If you bought one of Muntz's players, you would only have 4 tracks.
So you either got four mono tracks or you got two stereo tracks. So it was up to you which one you wanted to buy. And he started getting pretty successful with this whole thing, and he started getting licensing through different music corporations. And when he started having them put into different cars in California, had real success with them, specifically through people who were in the music industry, and that's how he actually pitched them. He had pictures of, and I got a list of them here, I'm just going to read them to you. Frank Sinatra had one in his Riviera. Peter Lawford had one. James Garner had one in his Jaguar. Red Skelton had one in his Rolls Royce. And Lawrence Welk had one in his Dodge convertible. So all of this stuff is out there, and people are playing around with it, but still, we're not to the 8-track tape yet because we're only dealing with Muntz's system, where in cars, where what a lot of people believed is hi-fi rarely mattered. So you had either four monos, which a lot of music was recorded in mono at that point in time. The original Beatles recordings were all in mono. So stereo wasn't really that big a thing yet. So if you got stereo, you got half the amount of music because that's all the tape could handle. Remember Bill Lear, as in Lear Jets?
Yes.
He's about to come back.
Well, hang on one second.
What?
These tracks that are in the cars now,
yeah.
When you actually got out of the car, did the people pull those out like they used to pull out the cassette players? Do you remember that?
I don't think so. And I don't think anybody would steal these things just yet.
Okay.
Although they were real hip and cool.
Not good enough to steal yet.
I don't think they were quite good enough to steal yet. I mean, he put these things in some really nice cars for some really nice people, but I'm not sure that these were the things that people were going around knocking off yet. And besides, if you were found inside of Frank Sinatra's Riviera, I think there was a sign that said, if you're found here at night, you'll be found here in the morning. And now the one that Chad requested. Here's Elton John. The bitch is back. Right here. Rock School.
Not nice.
All right, first break here on Rock School. I'm talking about the history of the 8-track tape. Let's skip to history for a second. Let me just tell you what I hated mostly about my 8-track tapes. 8-track tapes did not have any kind of, how would I put this? You couldn't sort of elongate the tape to have certain songs be on it. So wherever the tape ended, that's where the song had to be faded down. So you would basically have a song coming to a certain point, fade down, and then you had that nice loud ka-chunk, where it would jump to the next two tracks,
hated
and then it would
that.
Fade back up.
Mm-hmm.
God, I hated that.
Me too.
You also have what are known as perfect albums, and later in the show we'll talk about that, but albums that just out of pure dumb luck fit perfectly on 8-track tapes, and we'll talk about those a little later on. But you said you had, in your, was it your sister's house?
Yeah, my sister's house.
The she had something. Love Bar.
She had something very cool.
Tell me about the 8-track Love Bar.
Okay, it was exactly what you think it is. It was a bar, and it was tall and black, and behind it there was an 8-track player.
Nice.
Yes, it gets better.
Uh-huh.
And then lights would blink on and off with the music. And at 15...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that was the coolest thing ever. I would go in there and just turn the lights off and watch the lights blink.
And what music would you listen to? What would be your 8-track tape of choice?
Well, it was either Donna Summer or the Eagles.
Okay, we won't play Donna Summer on this.
Right.
And even though Donna Summer is up for grabs for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, you know, I don't think she should go in. I know she's the queen of disco, but I don't think she should go in. By the way, that concept of the lights listening for the 1,000 hertz, the 3,000 hertz, whatever tone,
magic.
And then switching, that
uh-huh.
kind of thing. Remember me telling you at the beginning of the show, my father gave me that briefcase?
Yes.
He also bought along with it from Radio Shack this sort of, I don't know, 15 by 18 inch box that had lights inside of it.
Oh, you had lights too?
I did.
Oh, it's meant to be.
You plug this thing into the wall and just sort of set it somewhere and the lights would blink. You had to be really
stoned to really enjoy the goofy
thing.
Did
the chicks just love you in Cleveland?
Sure they did. They also loved the 7-Up can that had the light socket installed in it, which I put a black light in so I could sit in my room and look at my Houses of the Holy black light poster.
Oh,
yeah, you'd have loved me in high school. Coming out of the break, we're going to have one that she used to listen to, my wife used to listen to, while sitting in front of the Love Bar. Hello, KLSU on the campus of Louisiana State University. Thanks for running the radio show.
And KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana.
No jokes about Shreveport? No jokes about
Man, you're supposed to do a joke!
No.
I'm not doing a joke.
Get us on Facebook. You'll find Rock School Radio Show. Tell us if you want Chad to return or you want my loving wife to be on there.
It's already up there. They want me back.
Back in a minute. Rock School. All right, coming out of the break, let's get back more to the history of the 8-track tape. Remember I told you Bill Lear was coming back? Bill Lear is now rich. Super rich, ungodly rich. Look out, there's money coming out of his ears, rich, dressed like the Monopoly guy, rich. He is now a guy who's making Lear jets. In 63, Bill Lear becomes a distributor for Muntz Electronics and begins to install these 4-track units aboard Lear jets for numerous reasons, one of them being music. People are flying in a Lear jet and they want to hear music. The thing is, he doesn't like the fact that you can't get real decent stereo out of these. Because if you remember, Madman Muntz was buying this stuff out of Japan. He's trying to get it as low cost as possible. Well, Lear jets are known for luxury, right?
Absolutely, yes.
You know, spend more, get more. Lear goes ahead and contacts a company called Nortronics in Michigan that create a brand new pole piece in the head. And instead of being able to get just 4 tracks, now he can get 8 tracks.
Now we're cooking.
Right. Here is where in 1963, the actual 8-track is built. And if you want to know, it's specifically a guy by the name of Richard Krause who creates it. So if you want to know where it went, it was Madman Muntz, Earl Madman Muntz, a car dealer, who actually came up with the idea, but it was Bill Lear of Lear Jets who actually, I don't know, can you perfect an 8-track tape?
I guess he did.
Yeah, he perfected the 8-track tape. It was also Krause who created the concept of being able to jump it from one set of tracks to the next set of tracks to the next set of tracks without the user having to do anything. See, the user had to bounce it from track to track, and I'll tell you how that worked in just a minute. Now, you wanted to play the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of slow. Can we play something by Styx? See, a lot of people said they had Styx on Facebook. A lot of people said they had Styx. Let's just play Styx.
You.
Oh! All right, here's the Eagles, ladies and gentlemen, Rock School. Well, there you go. There's the Eagles by special request by my loving wife. Hey, welcome to the bottom of the hour. My name is Joe Burns.
And I'm Tammy Burns.
There you are. Tammy paid $200 to be the second host of this here, the Rock School Radio Show, as part of the KSLU Fun Drive. Hey, Chad, is it still going on? Can people still, they can't give money anymore?
No.
Can they give money to hear my wife curse again?
No!
Okay. This is the bottom
of
the hour.
Can we get rid of him?
Let's do 7 days in 70 seconds. Monday, October 3rd through Sunday, October 9th. Tammy has Monday. Go.
Monday, October 3rd, 1964. The Supremes hit number one for the second time with Baby Love.
Tuesday, October 4th, 1957. A poll by British magazine NME states that Pat Boone is the world's number one singer. Elvis comes in number two.
Wednesday, October 5th, 2006. 5 years ago, Madonna visits an orphanage in Malawi, where she later adopts a motherless one-year-old boy named David Banda.
You know, most people just come home with a different souvenir, like, I don't know, a painting or a t-shirt.
She came home with a kid.
I'm with Madonna.
Thursday, October 6, 1976, disc jockey Rick Dees is awarded a platinum record for the single Disco Duck.
Friday, October 7th, 1975, John Lennon wins his four-year fight to stay in the U.S. with a ruling by a U.S. Court of Appeal.
Saturday, October 8th, 1980, Bob Marley collapses on stage at a concert in Pittsburgh. It will end up being his last concert. And then Sunday, October 9th, 1973, Elvis and Priscilla are officially granted a D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Okay, we got to get back into music, and I think I can keep you quiet from cursing for just a short while. Here is Styx, and this is Renegade Rock School.
Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far.
There, got my Styx in there. Not bad.
Are
welcome
you
to
happy
Rock School.
Now?
Oh, I'm a happy, happy guy. And you know, Styx was requested off of Facebook by Gary, a buddy of mine who I went to college with, who was also a radio guy. And he said specifically that that song, Renegade, was one of those that faded down, ka-chunk, and then faded back up. Now, why did 8-track tapes go ka-chunk and move from track to track to track? Because I told you in the Madman Muntz ones, you had to, you know, advance them yourself. The person who helped put together the first 8-track tape, Richard Krauss, the system was this. As the tape, as the 8-track tape, this continuous loop of tape, went over the heads, at the end of the tape, where the tape, you know, was looped together and then taped, what he did was put in a little tiny piece, oh, about an inch, inch and a half long, of foil. Something that when it went across the heads, it sort of changed the poles. It sort of it changed the electrical feel of the head, and the head knew something was wrong. And the electronics knew that it was no longer looking at a piece of audio tape. It was looking at something different, and that tripped the head to change tracks. And that's why you got the ka-chunk.
So they never even listened to the song to find out where the ka-chunk was going to be?
They knew the length of the tape. They knew how much tape was inside of this piece, and by knowing the length of the tape, they knew how much audio they could go because it ran at X inches per second. I'm assuming 7.5. That would make sense to me because that's what reel-to-reels run at, but I don't know what its speed was. It used a capstan and a pinch roller, which is a spinning piece of metal at a specific speed, which is what keeps it on speed. And then the pinch roller is a round piece of rubber that pulls the tape through. They push against one another, which is what pulls the tape through and keeps it at a specific speed. And since the machines were already invented that, you know, for reel-to-reels that kept it going at 7.5 inches, I'm assuming that's what they went at. I could be 100% wrong on that, but that's what I assume they went at. When where the tape was together, that thing went across, the little piece of foil, it ka-chunk, went to the next piece. Interestingly enough, and this is really something that audiophiles will like more than anything, the heads didn't play tracks 1 and 2, then 2 and 4, then, I'm sorry, 1 and 2, then 3 and 4, then 5 and 6. It actually played tracks 1 and 5, and then when it went ka-chunk, it played 2 and 6, and then 3 and 7, and then 4 and 8. So it actually skipped over, and which was probably pretty smart, because if the tracks had been right next to each other, they might have been so close they bled.
You know what I used to do?
What's that?
I used to figure it out. How many punches it would take for me to get to my favorite song.
What was across from each other?
It was like a code.
Sure. Once you figured it out, it's sort of like you defeated the 8-track
tape.
That's
right.
What was the first car to have an 8-track tape in it? Do you know?
Ooh, my grandmother's. I don't know. I don't know.
What'd your grandmother drive?
She was like in a Chevy Impala, and you would go out and put the 8-track in, and she'd come out screaming, "You're going to run down my battery. You're going to run down my battery."
It was a Ford Mustang. And the Ford Mustang had their electronics created by the Motor Victrola. The Motor Victrola? Any idea what company that became? Motorola. All right, let's play another one here for you. This one was actually suggested to us off of Facebook as well. And again, another song that, you know, played along. Go down, ka-chunk, came right back up. This is a friend of mine from high school, Cindy. She said she personally never owned an 8-track player, but her husband had it, loved it. Here you go, Blue Morning, Blue Day, from the album Double Vision by Foreigner, which apparently was in a blue 8-track cassette player. player.
Nice.
Sounds like this, Rock School. All right, second break here on Rock School. Now, we were talking about Motorola Corporation and the fact that we're now to eight tracks, so you can have four tracks of stereo. Did you have anybody around? I remember this distinctly. Did you have anybody around when you were growing up that took an old Ford conversion van and sort of welded the back doors closed and sanded them and had the airbrush of
The love machine.
Oh, the unicorn on the side and that butter yellow carpet on the inside. Did they also install a quad stereo system?
They did.
Did they really?
They did.
Now, was it really quad or was it just sort of four speakers pushing out stereo?
Now I don't know. Now I'm confused about the whole thing. It sounded good.
Okay, well, there's quad and then there's double stereo. Double stereo is simply an eight-track system where they came out of it, split the signal, and then put two stereo in the back, two stereo in the front. However, there was a system put out by RCA in April 1970 known as Quad 8 or Q8, where you could only get two tracks. So four tracks of quad, four tracks of quad. The music was literally broken into four individual tracks rather than stereo split. So you could only get, you know, two tracks. So when it went ka-chunk, that was it. It just went to the second track. And when you listened to it, you had four speakers sending out four different pieces of music.
Right.
And they called it Quad 8. And the only person I ever knew that had a Quad 8 was a guy with a refurbished Ford conversion van, who he might have called it the love machine. But I remember on the side of it was a woman in a leather and fur bikini, you know, air sprayed, and she was holding a chain, and at the end of the chain was a couple of panthers, you know, as you see around Cleveland all the time. And inside of it, he had this, and I remember him popping in. It was an Elvis.
What was his name? Do you remember?
I don't. He was a lineman for the football team.
Something that ended with ski, I'm sure,
might have been, yeah, in Cleveland, yeah. But before the football game, we would hang out around his you know, van, and he'd have the windows
and discuss.
Open. Oh, yeah. Solve the problems of the world. Hello, WBSD, Burlington, Wisconsin. Who else listens to us?
Well, hello to Radio Universidad, Salamanca, Spain.
You betcha. Back in a minute, we're going to start talking about the perfect 8-track tapes. Believe it or not, they exist. Back in a minute. Rock School. All right, talking about the history of the 8-track tape, we're pretty much into what?
Can you guys play Bob Seger?
We're going to play Bob Seger.
Get out of here, for goodness sakes.
Get lost. We're on a date.
This is a date?
This is a date.
You are so cheap.
You betcha. 23 years of marriage later, this is all you're going to get.
Oh, boy.
If it was still warm outside, I'd take you out for a snowball.
You know what I want to do today?
What's that?
Kill you.
That's right. In the world of 8-track tapes, we have been making sort of a joke about this whole thing, the concept of, you know, songs playing, fade down, ka-chunk, and it comes back up. In rare instances, there were what were nicknamed the perfect albums. These were albums that just by pure, unadulterated, dumb luck, they fit perfectly on an 8-track tape.
They should have had a sticker on them that said that.
Pure dumb luck, we fit on an 8-track tape. Now, what would have had to have happened, since it was a record, it would have had to have been half of the first side on one track, half of the first side on the other track, and then, obviously, again, half of the second side on a track and half of the other half of the side on the track. Here are some successes. Quadrophenia by The Who.
Great.
Days of Future Past by The Moody Blues. Freeways by Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
Owned
Octave.
It.
Did you really?
Yeah, had that one.
Octave by The Moody Blues. Caught Live Plus Five by The Moody Blues. The Concert in Central Park by Simon and Garfunkel.
Had that.
And this one here, Live Bullet by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. And it sounds like this. Here's Nutbush City Limits from a perfect 8-track tape. Rock School.
Ka-chonk.
Bob Seger from one of the most perfect 8-track tapes around. Let me tell you about some other things that happened with 8-track tapes here. Many 8-track tapes were released that didn't fit, so extra music was added to them. Lou Reed's Berlin had extra piano solos put onto it, and there was an extra guitar solo added to Pink Floyd's Animals. So if you had the Pink Floyd Animals, I guess, 8-track tape, you actually got more music than you would if you actually bought the record.
Did you pay more for it?
I never had Pink Floyd's Animals on 8-track tapes. In fact, I seldom had any 8-track tapes.
Well, you had two because your daddy bought them for you, right?
Oh, I had a bunch of them. My daddy bought them for me. I had a bunch of them, but I moved to records and cassettes real quick.
Me too.
It was just easier to carry them around. 8-track tapes were big enough you could throw them at people.
Oh, they were bulky. They were
really
always underneath the car seat. Remember that?
You had to fish them out. There's a debate over what was the last 8-track tape created. The debate is this, you know, what was the last one commercially created? Now, you can, just as they're now creating vinyl albums of just about anything you want, there are companies that if I made a song right now, a company would cut me a record of it. So you really have to ask, what is the last commercially available one? Some people say it's Cheap Tricks, the latest, which was released on June 23rd, 2009. But that was, again, you sort of had to order that one. They let it go on a very, very limited release.
2009.
But
wow.
It was one of those things where they let it go on a limited release. Like, we're making, you know, 1,000 of them.
Right, vintage, right?
The last one that was created as sort of part of its run and then was never made anymore, was in 1988. And it's generally agreed, but again, you know, people will fight about it. Fleetwood Mac's Greatest Hits.
One of my favorites.
Was supposedly the last one made in terms of it was part of its commercial run. So this one comes from Fleetwood Mac's Greatest Hits. And you actually asked for this one last night, which is why it came along with us. Here you go. You can go your own way. Rock School. All right, here we go. Last break on Rock School, and we got to do it fairly quick. Hey, thanks for coming out. Thanks for the $200 to the KSLU Fund Drive.
And, thanks for having me.
Oh,
this
good.
Was great.
Can I
get out of here.
Get lost.
Come on, man, you booger.
So, Tammy, now that we've...
You booger.
Yeah. Now that we've done the show together, uh-huh. You want to do something? You want to go get a coffee or something? Can we...
A coffee?
Yeah, can, I don't know, kind of see each other outside of work? Uh-huh. What do you say?
I'm seeing someone.
Are you really?
I am.
Like, it's too bad. What's
it's
his
like,
name?
It's a radio guy.
Oh, well. Hate radio
funny.
Guys. We're going to wrap up on the one that actually was the first song after my loving wife Tammy came up with this topic. This is the Gap Band, and you dropped a bomb on me. This was it. This was literally the song that was the, I guess, auspices for this show.
It was.
Why this song?
I don't know. I've seen him so many times in concert, and this song is about 30 minutes in concert.
You've
and
seen the Gap Band in concert?
They play all corporate events.
And you've seen them?
Yeah. Every time I'm out there shaking my booty.
That'll do it. I'm Joe Burns.
And I'm Tammy Burns.
Class is dismissed.